Hello, welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, a podcast all about Aston Villa with myself, Dan Bardell, and The Athletic's Aston Villa writer, Greg Evans. Right now, if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can give another subscription as a gift for free. It's the perfect present for any football fan this Christmas. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. It's the perfect present for yourself and someone else, so just go to theathletic.com/villapod. That's theathletic.com/villapod and sign up now. Greg, freshly back from the Hawthorns, West Bromwich Albion 0, Aston Villa 3. A walk in the park, really, for Villa, if you will, but good to see.
Yeah, hello Dan, it's been a while, hasn't it? Can't believe you had a Wolves fan on last week in place of me. What's going on there?
I wish I'd had him on after the game, to be fair, rather than before.
You all right, pal?
really good. Obviously, Aston Villa away games at the moment, pretty much. We know we're going to be talking about a win.
Yeah, incredible, really. I mean, just the away form, you know, is sensational, isn't it? And let's be honest, the West Ham game should have ended in a positive result for Villa as well. Yeah. So, you know, we should be talking about an unbeaten run of games for Villa on the road. But yeah, turning into a really solid team now, aren't they? And one that are so attractive and enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, since we last podcasted together, that's 7 points for Villa, 3 clean sheets. And 3 goals, obviously, to tonight, which is always nice to see. I mean, Anwar El Ghazi, for example. I mean, we probably hadn't spoken about him all season, and then suddenly, in the space of 8 days, he's got 3 goals, come back from nowhere.
Yeah, I think he turns into Ronaldo every time he goes to the Hawthorns, doesn't he?
You know, he loves the Hawthorns.
4 goals, I think, he scored there. Completely different player when he plays West Bromwich Albion, but yeah, fair play to him. You know, he's turned his form around. He was he came under a little bit of criticism, didn't he, in the Burnley game, because he had six opportunities and couldn't put one of them away. But it took him just what, 3 or 4 minutes, was it, to score against West Brom. So yeah, you know, put those critics and doubters behind him, and yeah, fair play to him. I think the beauty of this Villa team at the moment is players are coming in and you know, and they're filling in, and you're not almost missing the players that they're replacing.
Yeah, because we've spoke about squad depth a number of times on this podcast. It's been something that we've been worried about, especially up front, but it shows you how quickly things can change. So for the players not in the team at the moment, a week's a very long time in football, and things can change.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, yeah, because I mean, I'm off work next week for the week, and I've written well, it's a strange one, isn't it, because I've had so many days that I haven't taken because of, you know, the pandemic, and I always find it hard to take days off and just stay at home, but we've literally had to this year, haven't we? So going off track a little bit, but I've written a few stories in advance, and some of them I need to change now, because you know, the results that Villa have picked up in the space of a week have changed the complex and the dynamic a lot. And, you know, Al Ghazi's one of these players that now looks like he can come in and do a job. Whereas, you know, maybe even after the Burnley game, we were thinking, is he quite good enough to fit into this new and evolving Villa team? But tonight he proved it. Okay, West Brom are the worst team in the league, and Villa aren't going to get an easier game than that. But, you know, he's still gone and done it, and could have had a hat-trick, couldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you want to get yourself 20 jobs like me. I can't remember the last time I had a day off from doing one of the various jobs that I'm doing at the moment. But you talk about the Burnley game, though, and if Villa had gone 1-0 up against Burnley, it probably would have been a similar game to tonight, but they didn't, and I think that they could still be playing at Villa Park now and they wouldn't have hit the back of the net. But an early goal sets Villa on the way, and when Villa do score first, they usually win. And well, in fact, not usually, they do win.
Yeah, it's every game, isn't it, Dan? Correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, I think every game they've took the lead, they've went on and won, haven't they?
So certainly since football came back.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good sign to me, you know, a sign of a really good team, I think, because, you know, Dean Smith keeps saying this in every press conference. He says that he believes his team have been better than the opposition in every single game this season, except for Leeds United. And it continues, you know, every single week. And we can't deny that, you know, can we? I think we both agree that Villa have been the better team in every game that they've played, except for against Leeds. So, you know, it's a really positive time to be a Villa fan at the moment. A really positive time to report on the club. You know, it's certainly enjoyable from my point of view. Villa are winning games and they look like a team that are capable of competing for Europe, I think.
West Brom didn't look like a team that were competing for anything tonight, even with 11 men. I actually don't think the game would have been much different. 11 v 11, I don't think it made that much difference to the tail of the tape, really. But what did you think of the sending offs? Because I think the Livermore one, I think most people would say that was a red card. But then straight after that, a suspect incident with Courtney Hall, and it probably was a good chance for the referee to actually even things up, and he didn't. It was a yellow. But what did you make of those two bits of officiating and those two bits of decision?
Yeah, I was talking to my colleagues, you know, in the press box about the match officials. Probably, I think we were 30, 35 minutes into the game, and we were saying that Martin Atkinson was letting play, you know, go on quite easily, and it was almost a breath of fresh air to some extent, because the performance of Mike Dean as the referee against Wolves, you know, in the Wolves versus Villa game was just ridiculous. And I just thought, I remember coming away from Molineux thinking, what on earth have I just watched? You know, it was a really poor refereeing performance, too many yellow cards, silly yellow cards, too many fouls given. So when Martin Atkinson was letting play go on, I thought fair play. But then, yeah, it's just the inconsistencies of refereeing across the Premier League, which is really frustrating now, isn't it? You seem to be coming away from every game and asking why certain decisions were made. They were both red cards for me. You know, I think both players should have been sent off. I thought what's really sad about football now is that you just can't do anything. I'm watching games now across the Premier League and it seems like there's always a sending off. I watched Fulham versus Newcastle last night and I didn't think that was a sending off, yet it was. I watched Sheffield United play earlier on today. Another sending off. It just seems there's a sending off or a VAR decision in every single game now, and it's almost ruining football a little bit. Just because, you know, a sending off completely changes the game, doesn't it? And I think it does here tonight. I think, you know, West Bromwich Albion showed what they can do against Manchester City. They're not a very good side, but they can defend very well and you know, hold teams to, you know, what they've already got. But as soon as they go down to 10 men, as they've shown this season, it's curtains. You know, they've had three sending offs so far this season, and they lost 5-2 to Everton, they lost 5-1 to Crystal Palace, and they lost 3-0 to Villa today. And let's be honest, it should have been 4-5 or 6, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was Villa's most vintage display of the season. I think obviously West Brom sit back quite deep, it's difficult to break down, but there were some lively displays. It was, I've not had a problem with Bertrand Traoré. I've seen some stuff on social media where Villa fans calling him out, but it's early days for the lad. He hasn't been at the club very long, playing in a different league. But he showed his ability in his class tonight, didn't he? Obviously, he got that lovely assist, but his goal as well was so well taken.
Yeah, lovely goal. Made very easy for him again. You know, horrendous defending. And I think what West Brom have made, they've made Villa look really good tonight. And, you know, it's great that for Villa that players have been able to step up and take their opportunity when it comes. And, you know, El Ghazi needed the goals. Bertrand Traoré probably did need a goal, didn't he? You know, he was getting to the stage where supporters were asking, is this £18 million well spent, or is it maybe a waste of money, or overspend? But the way I was trying to describe it in my reporting is that Villa signed 5 players over the summer and 4 of them have come off. So if you can get a 4 out of 5 ratio every time you buy players, you know, that's a really, really good turnaround. And what we're also seeing now is that Traoré isn't, you know, done, and we shouldn't write him off yet, because he's clearly got something about him, a goal, an assist tonight. And I think his deliveries are turning into a real handful for Villa. And I think Villa will get goals off his deliveries.
Yeah, and I think against the lower play size like West Brom, he could actually be a real wild card option for Villa. And there's good competition out wide now as well. El Ghazi's obviously coming from the cold over the last week or so. We've still got Trezeguet to come back. Jack's spending some time in the middle at the moment, but he obviously picks himself on the left-hand side when Ross Barkley's fit. What have you made of Jack's switch to the middle over the last week?
I thought that Villa's well-oiled machine kind of looked a little bit broken against Burnley, even though they were so dominant and Grealish played very well. I thought that if it was Grealish coming off the left and somebody else assisting him with all those chances, then Villa would have gone on to win the game. But it was just Grealish setting up El Ghazi almost every time, wasn't it? And he couldn't stick the ball away. So I was just wondering going into this game against West Brom and then the Crystal Palace game against on Boxing Day, whether Jack being in the middle was helping or hindering Villa. Now, as I say, I don't think his performance level's dropped at all, but I just think that he's better coming onto those chances and someone assisting him. So it's, you know, really exciting to think of how fluid and entertaining Villa could be when Barkley's back, and it led to believe that he'll be back for the Palace game, which will be a good sign.
Yes, me and you were having a conversation on text yesterday where you were saying, really valid point, Villa play Chelsea in a couple of games' time where Ross can't play because it's his parent club, obviously. So Villa are now in the situation where they could give him a proper rest and make sure he's fully recovered, or they throw him in against Palace. Do you think off the back of a really good 8 days, 7 points from nine, do you think they will throw him back in?
I think he'll be available, so I think he will be on the bench, and, you know, if they need to call on him, they will. Smith said after the game today that because the temperature was dropping at the Hawthorns, he didn't feel like it would be the right time to reintroduce him. I think if Villa was struggling and not performing well, then maybe they would have rushed it, but that's the beauty at the moment. Villa are getting results and performing really well, so it feels like when the Villa are not really missing him, are they? You know, it'll just be because results are so good, you know, it'll just be a bonus when he comes back, because you'll feel like Villa will be able to create more chances and hopefully score some more goals.
Yeah, I suppose it's the home form, isn't it? The away form's obviously stupendous. We've already gone on about that. But if they'd had Barkley against Burnley, for example, we may well have broken them down and come away with 9 points instead of seven. So I guess Palace might be a similar game in the fact that they'll defend quite deep. They're coming off the back of a real big defeat against Liverpool this weekend as well. So that they'll probably be a safety first approach from Crystal Palace, I'll imagine. So you're making me feel like I know nothing about football, though. We're talking about Dean Smith and not playing him because of the temperature. Am I missing something there? Is that a normal thing?
I think it's just, you know, they don't want to rush him back, really. They don't want to give him any excuse to have a further setback. Look, it's a hamstring injury, so they're just taking the time with him. They're giving him the rest periods, and I think it'll be the doctors that will be telling Smith about these things. But yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise to me as well,
because Villa have actually had to utilise quite a lot of their squad over the last week. We've spoke about there being a lack of depth before, but actually now the players that have come in have done okay. I mean, Nakamba came in midweek and he did nothing wrong. He did his job, essentially, but he struggles with the fact that he basically isn't Douglas Luiz, who is an absolutely sensational player at the moment. So Villa have had to utilise different players. Elmo came in, Cash was obviously back tonight. How important is that going to be over the Christmas period? Because now we've got Mings missing against Crystal Palace, so it's going to be Hawes and Concert or Engels, depending on what's going on with Concert's health now as well. It does show just the value of having a squad.
Yeah, totally. Cons will be back for the Crystal Palace game. Yeah, you know, obviously everybody knows at the moment what's going on in the world. So if there's a player's got a little bit of an issue, you know, that they're kept well away from everywhere. Konza hopefully will be back. Smith seems to think that he will, but I think Villa are using the squad well. You know, I mean, we've been talking, haven't we, about in every podcast thinking that when injuries and suspensions kick in, that's going to be the time when Villa have struggled. But they're showing that they have actually got strength in depth. I didn't think the Campbell was great, to be honest. I mean, Smith has been talking quite highly about him in the couple of days that I've spoke to him. But, you know, whether that's just protecting the player or not, I don't know. But as you said, yeah, he didn't disgrace himself, but I just thought he gave away too many needless fouls. I thought his passing accuracy was about 72%, which is really poor. I thought he gave the ball away too often. And then when you look at Douglas Luiz coming back tonight, I mean, he was brilliant again. What I love about him is that even when even when Villa get into a little bit of trouble, and it's very rare now that these times are few and far between with three clean sheets in the last three games, Douglas Luiz always seems to be there as cover just to mop up, and he's become this really disciplined defensive midfielder that, you know, we kind of expected when he arrived, but he never produced it initially, but now he really is. You know, he's such a valuable asset to this Villa team, and it's not just the way he covers and helps his teammates, it's the way he gets the ball moving, and his passing ability is unbelievable. You know, he's the way he can just make passes look so simple. I think it was 85% passing accuracy tonight, which is the highest of the season for him, and he's a big part of this Villa team now, and they really do miss him when he doesn't play.
Do you remember when we used to do podcasts criticising him and not understanding what he was? That's, I feel, a long time ago.
I do, Dan, yeah. And it's funny, really, but I do back our judgment at the time. You know, I genuinely think, and you do too, you know, we were watching a player that was struggling. You know, he was... What's happened is he's reinvented himself. He's decided that he's not this box-to-box midfielder anymore. He is happy to sit there now in front of the back five and protect them and venture forward when he needs to and when he's allowed to, almost. And it's that discipline now that has made him so good. But he's only a youngster and he's going to need that. He's going to need people around him telling him what to do, and I think finally that, you know, he's clocked it now, hasn't he? He's got it. He's a really, really good player, and Villa are so lucky to have him.
And they need to do something about his contract, don't they? Because I watch Man City at the moment, and they're midfield, and I'm not having Rodri at all. Fernandinho's coming to the end of his career. They've got a player there who's accomplished now as a defensive midfielder in the Premier League, and that's a worry. So Villa need to try and do something about that. They kind of been great at tying people down in the last 6 months, but they need to do it with him as well, don't they?
Yeah, there's just a, you know, there is a real niggling worry about that one, unfortunately. I mean, Villa aren't in any talks to extend deals at the moment. You know, Douglas Luiz and Konsa will be the next ones to sign extensions. You know, if they do, I'm sure they will at some point. But for Villa, unfortunately, that clause won't go away. So it's always going to be there, unfortunately.
And the worry is, I mean, obviously, we probably don't know what the fee is, but it's going to be under market value, you would say, at the moment. But I guess when we did the deal, that was a risk we took, Greg.
Yeah, totally. And look, you know, at the time, he was an unproven player. He hadn't really done it. He was over at Girona, who got relegated. And, you know, you often wonder, don't you, whether Man City buy players to help their, you know, their other clubs. And it kind of felt like it in that respect. I know that there was a lot of talk from Guardiola saying that he wanted him in his team. You know, he wanted to get that work permit sorted. But with the City Group, you have to remember that they've got a club in every continent, and they look to support clubs, you know, all over the world. They want this global domination, and there are always question marks around the seriousness of how much Manchester City wanted Douglas Luiz. But you know, it must have been quite serious because they insisted on the buyback clause, and yeah, I don't know the value of it, but it won't go away. And if Man City want to get him back in the summer, then they might do that.
I would suggest Pep signing a new deal at Man City isn't ideal for that scenario. So that's something that we need to keep our eye on and something potentially to worry about. But let's try and talk about happier things, because let's face it, it's a pretty happy time to be a Villa fan at the moment. Another clean sheet for Emi Martinez. That guy's going to need a new laundry basket soon, isn't he, Greg, with all his clean sheets?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, seven clean sheets in 12 games. You know, it's very easy, isn't it, though, to laud and praise the defence and pinpoint Martinez and the new arrivals that have come into the defence. But the story that I've written for tomorrow is that Villa are defending exceptionally well from the front. And it's all actually starting with Ollie Watkins. Now, it's probably something that supporters don't necessarily see, because obviously watching it on telly, that, you know, that you can't see the off-the-ball movements that Watkins is constantly making. But I watched him closely, especially in the first half today, and there were lots of darting runs into the channels, and he really sets the tempo for Villa, and he really instigates the press, and it all starts from him. So I think that although his goal record is now starting to come into question a little bit because he hasn't scored for a while, and he was so unlucky today, wasn't, wasn't he?
Another,
just millimeters, you know, and he must feel like that the world, not the world's against him, but he must feel like, you know, when's he going to get a lucky break, because he's had a couple of hard luck stories now with goals. But I think that although we'll judge him on his goals at the end of the season, we've got to look at the bigger picture and what he's doing for this Villa team. And internally, the staff are really grateful, actually, and they're really pleased with his performances. And it feels like with him in the team now, Villa are able to play a little bit differently to last season, because he harasses and presses and causes problems for defenders in a way that Wesley, Samatta and Davies just couldn't do last season. And that is changing the whole dynamic of this Villa team and helping them play in a much different way. So I think he deserves a bit of credit, and that's what I've tried to do in my article for tomorrow.
Well, something's clearly changed with Villa going forward, because we're scoring a lot of goals, we're sharing the goals around. Watkins, although being he's only scored in two games from open play, his goal record is good, but such an, I don't know whether you've wrote this in your article, because obviously I haven't read it yet, but a big part of the modern day centre forward is occupying centre halves, and he's doing that.
Yeah, totally. Look, and there's no player in the Premier League other than Ollie Burke who has had more pressures in the attacking third than Ollie Watkins this season. So, you know, it just shows what he's doing. You know, and his figures are higher than the likes of Salah and Firmino and Bamford, you know, in teams that are known for their pressing style. So, you know, I think he's really, he's almost an unsung hero, because 8 goals in 15 games, he's still a good tally. But, you know, there are question marks over the amount of games that he scored in, because, you know, he got 3, didn't he, in one, and I think he got 2 in the cup in one of them, did he?
Yeah, 2 at Arsenal.
Yeah, two at Arsenal, of course, yeah. So, you know, there are some supporters raising questions, because he hasn't scored in more games than he has scored in. But you've just got to look at the bigger picture, and I think Dean Smith, you know, he's so grateful for him, because he's helping Villa play the way that Dean Smith wants Villa to play.
Obviously, they don't count, but he did score 2 goals that were like millimetres offside. So if they count, obviously it's a very different story. I know they don't count, but you know what I'm saying. They're still, got their goals, if that makes sense. Do you get what I mean?
I do, yeah. And look, you know, he's going to be disappointed with the penalty as well now. You know, if he'd have stuck that penalty away, he'd have been on pens and he might have had another couple to add to his tally. But that will be, you know, his own downfall. He'll have to work on that. But I still think it's been a good start for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy with what I'm seeing from him. And to be fair, bit of competition now as well, because Wesley looks like he's on his way back from the training ground, pictures and images that you see. We're getting to that point now, like last season, where every week I'm going to ask you about January, I'm going to ask you about the transfer window and what you're hearing. Approaching January now, what are you expecting from Villa?
I expect it to be a really quiet window.
You sound like last season.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, Villa are going to be reactive rather than proactive in this window, just like they were last season. And I mean, you know, I was telling you the same last season, and it genuinely would have been the case. But if you remember, around about this time last year, McGinn got injured, Danny Drinkwater come in, Heaton got injured, Pepe Reina came in, Wesley got injured, Samatta came in. Pretty sure that was all Villa did, wasn't it? They didn't get anyone else in.
Don't forget Borja Bastón, Greg.
Of course, yeah. So, you know, if you look at that, they bought 4 players and 3 of them were to replace injured players. So, you know, that they would have only probably signed 1 player otherwise, if that. And that's what it's going to be this season. You know, they're quite happy with, in fact, they're very happy with the squad. The striker issue, I can understand why supporters want another striker. If Wesley comes back, we're going to have to be very patient with him, because a year out of action, it's going to take him some time to get back used to it. Keenan Davies doesn't score goals in the Premier League. To be honest, I know this sounds really harsh, but doesn't score goals for Aston Villa, does he? So, you know, in the long term, unless something changes with his performances and his goal record, then Villa are probably going to be looking to replace him at some point. So what we might see is Davies potentially going out on loan and another forward or attacker coming in place of him. But Villa certainly will not be spending big money on a new signing, and 100% they won't be if they don't get any injuries.
Do you think Villa are in the position now where, obviously, like you've alluded to, there's a little bit of panic in some respects last January, but with Villa and transfers now, do you think they're in the position where they'll only buy someone if it's an upgrade on what they have in their first 11?
Well, yeah, totally. You know, that is the plan now. And the first season back in the Premier League was always going to be tough because they had to completely rebuild. But even going into that last window, you know, the last winter window, as I said, that there wasn't going to be much business, that it was purely reactive. And that's so great because it shows that the owners are, you know, willing to back the team in the times of trouble. But what they want is a really well-organised, a careful and considered plan in place. Johan Lange, the sporting director, provides that now. You know, he's a support act to Christian Perzo. Christian Perzo, the CEO, he's going to be the guy who does all the deals and puts those deals together. But Lange, he's recommending targets now, underpinned by his evidence, you know, in data. And it's really quite exciting because Villa will have a list of players that they've got on their radar now, and they'll be thinking, well, this is, you know, who we're going to be looking at in the future. And I think they'll spend big and heavily again in next summer, and as you say, just look to strengthen certain positions, because there'll be another need to rebuild in the summer if Villa are going to take it onto the next level.
It's, like you say, it's exciting. It's very interesting as well. Just before we go,
what do you think, Dan? I mean, you know, what's your take on it? Do you feel like that they need any additions now? I mean, my take on it would be that, yeah, another attacker would be brilliant. You know, another attacking, either a number 10 or a number 9 would give Villa that edge potentially going into the second half of the season. But realistically, do they actually need it?
I'm pretty happy with the squad. I know January is not a great time to buy people, so that's always something that plays a part. But I'm always the kind of person that thinks, well, what if this happens? So what if something did have to happen to Watkins? Fingers crossed it doesn't happen. I'd worry about what would come in to replace him up front, and I'd worry that would hold us back and set us back as a club. But I also know trying to buy a striker is virtually impossible in January, because Villa tried to do the same thing 12 months ago and it didn't really happen, and they got Samatta in and it didn't work out. So I'm not one of those people that thinks like, oh, we could do with the target having some better competition, because I don't think we need another left back. I think Neil Taylor is adequate as backup for Matt Target, and I think Matt Target's come on leaps and bounds over the last 12 months. So the striking position is the only position that really worries me, because it feels like we're light in terms of quality there and quantity, to be fair, as well. So it's the striking position is the only one that really bothers me. The rest I'm pretty happy with. You go again in the summer and you try and upgrade what you have and make your first 11 better, and that's how you have a better squad. But that's the only position I think that needs work, really.
Yeah. As I say, you know, in an ideal world, it'd be great to get another striker in, wouldn't it? Because you'd feel like it's a really competitive and quality squad there. But I just think that given the spend over the last three windows, Villa will keep it quite tight unless they really need to in January.
Ideally, you'd want someone who can play wide and up top. But essentially, that's what Watkins is. I know he doesn't really play wide for us, but he can play there. But then, are they going to get a game wide? Because Grealish is nailed on the left, and there's now a lot of competition on the right-hand side as well. So it's hard. We're in a good place. I think the general synopsis is, if you think back 12 months, Villa are in an excellent place, in an unbelievable place compared to where they were this time last year. We were doing podcasts genuinely worried about what was going to happen to the club. They were going to go down. They were going to lose Grealish. They needed to buy a striker. You don't have any of those worries now. So the club deserves a huge amount of credit for what has changed since we were doing podcasts this time last year, don't they?
Oh, totally. Yeah, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, I mean, the way Villa started this season was just, it was so disappointing, wasn't it? But they're finishing the season on a really high, and you know, we're genuinely talking about pushing for a European place, and I firmly believe Villa, playing the way that they are now, are capable of doing that. So yeah, there's a lot of people that deserve credit at that club. You know, it stems right back to the guys at the top who have invested heavily in everything. Dean Smith clearly deserves credit because he's drilled these players to play the way they're playing. He's identified the players and that he thinks can improve this team, and they are. And then, but you know, most of all, I always say this, I always feel like the players deserve the biggest amount of credit, because those are the guys that go out and do it, you know. And on the flip side, if they're not doing it, those are the ones that should be pulled up for not performing. So yeah, fair play to everyone associated to Villa at the moment, because it's all going in the right direction.
Yeah, just before we do finish, just wanted to single out. I know you've just mentioned pretty much the whole club. I think the tea lady was the only person you didn't thank there, Greg. But Dean Smith, I mean, I'm going to sound like Gabby Abonlaw here. The praise that Bielsa gets for Leeds, and even today they've lost 6-2 and everyone's raving about him. But Dean Smith has done an absolutely incredible job. And when things were going badly, he kept his head. When everyone else around them, including me and you at times on the podcast, were losing their heads, Dean Smith kept a cool head, kept us up. And just the strides are massive and unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I remember, I think I've said this a few times, I remember leaving King Power Stadium after Villa lost 4-0. And I think privately, even Smith thought that if they lose the next game against Chelsea, which ultimately never happened, then he probably would have lost his job. I think he was almost accepting that fact, you know, whether Villa would have lost it or not, we don't know at this stage. But he used that lockdown period to his advantage. He made sure that he didn't let this opportunity of managing the club that he loves and the club that he supported from a very young age slip away, and he did everything in his power to get that group together and you know, change the way that they were playing and just go back to basics really and get enough points to stay up. And the way they've transformed themselves and the way the team is completely different now is, you know, he deserves a huge amount of respect and praise for it. So fair play to him because he's doing a brilliant job at the moment. And yeah, you know, everyone goes on about Bielsa and how brilliant Leeds have been, etc. But yeah, it's a little bit different because they've just been promoted. So it is harder for a club moving into the Premier League for the first season. But, you know, if you look at Villa, they've created more chances than any single team in this division on average per game. They've had more touches than any other opposition in the attacking penalty box than any team in the division. And I mean, you know, those are clear signs that this is an exciting and entertaining team. And it just feels a little bit strange that Dean Smith isn't getting the credit that he deserves. And another thing is that the 7-2 win over Liverpool seems to almost be forgotten about. We should be talking about that every single week.
That was a joke
for the rest of this season. You know, Liverpool go and beat Crystal Palace 7-0 and that's all anyone's ever talking about. But 100% the Villa result over Liverpool is better than that result.
I mean, it's no argument. I couldn't believe some of the stuff I was reading yesterday on social media and in the press about that being the best performance of the season. I mean, to be fair, the Liverpool game does feel like it was a long time ago now, but it was this season.
Was it the last win at home as well? I think it was, wasn't it?
I think, yeah, it was. So that's probably another reason.
Maybe we should just shut up and end this pod now.
But if you're beating the champions 7-2 with Van Dijk playing, I may add it as well, that's an incredible result from a team that's just stayed up as well. That is easily the performance of the season, and nothing anybody does will top that. People were talking about Leeds losing 6-2 today as if it was better than Villa beating Liverpool 7-2. I mean, the mind just boggles. But yeah, back to Dean Smith. What a guy. And except for letting James Chester go, I absolutely adore the man. He'll never be forgiven for that. But everything he's done pretty much since football came back has been unbelievable, Dean Smith. And he deserves a huge amount of credit. I think that does us for tonight, Greg. It's getting quite late now. The clock's nearly coming up to midnight, so it's been great to talk to you about another win, especially a win over local rivals. I always enjoy those little bragging rights against teams like West Brom and Wolves, because although they're not proper rivalries in my mind, their attitude towards Villa annoys me, so it's nice to have a little bit of bragging. So I'll go to bed happy tonight, as I'm sure you will, Greg.
Good night.